Welcome to Activate Yourself with Gita Sidhu Rob, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Gita Sidhu Rob.
Hi, my name is Gita Sidhu Rob, and this is Activate Yourself. And as always, we try and bring you guests that show you that, you know, when life gives you lemon, make some freaking lemonade and get on with it, because it is what you make of it. And I honestly have a commitment where it comes to the show that I want to show you always again and again and again that whatever you get given in life, whatever is dealt to you in life, whatever happens to you in life, it is always going to be what you do with it that will transform that experience into something that is good for you or, you know, bad for you. And you can sit and cry about it into your martini for the next 20 years, which I really, the martini part I recommend. I do not recommend the crying into it part, but the martini, just stick with the martini. And then, you know, those people that walk around with their baggage, they literally, when they come say hello to you, they've got the bag, Santa Claus's bag of my victimness with you. I don't want you to be that person. What I want you to be is the person that thinks this is really shit. And it's going to be the making of the best part of my life. To that end, I usually have people that are a bit older that have had lives that have had good and bad. Today's our youngest ever guest, I think my youngest ever guest. So today we have Lauren Wale, who is 23 and the author of The Shuri Effect, which I didn't know what Shuri meant. But Lauren, firstly, let me let you get a word in edgeways. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to have this chat.
Good. It's such a pleasure. The goal behind the chat is for us to have a little bit of fun, be entertaining, and really learn a little bit more about you. Your book says it's about bridging the gap for young Black women in STEM.
Yes.
So really not any high ambitions there.
I mean, really, I'd love to solve every problem, but like baby stepping my way forward.
Let's just focus on the way we're going. Okay, so talk to me. There's, I love this whole age thing, okay? Because like my kids are just a tiny bit younger than you, and we have these phenomenal rows about stuff. One of the ones we have rows about is appropriation, because I will see a woman wearing a sari, and I'll be like, "You go, girl! How cool is that? That you're trying a sari?" And my kids will be going, "That's cultural appropriation." I'm like, "Bro, she's trying on a freaking sari. How is this cultural appropriation? She's clearly not Indian, right?" So here's for me. I have my first question: is what you describe yourself as a writer and an intersectional feminist? So excuse the hell out of me. What is an intersectional feminist, and who are you when you're at home?
Gosh, I mean, an intersectional feminist is, I guess, like a kind of feminist that aims to integrate other layers to someone's identity. So by saying I'm an intersectional feminist, I'm saying, okay, I believe in women's rights, and I acknowledge that being a woman and Black at the same time means you need a different kind of feminism to serve you. Being a woman and disabled at the same time means you have different, like potentially completely different feminist priorities. And the feminist movement needs to recognize those intersections and those overlaps and aim to support the eradication of barriers and boundaries on all of those levels. So it's the way everyone's always like, you know, the earliest waves of feminism were very white feminism.
Yeah.
Like the suffragettes did not let Indian women or Black women get properly involved in those movements.
You think they stopped them?
I'm pretty sure they actively stopped them. I've read many a story of like in the US, Black suffragettes being asked to walk at the back of the line.
Oh, wow. Do you know, I swear I never thought of that. But to be fair, I mean, as I'm an African and my children's knowledge of African history is so different to mine, because the stuff that I got taught growing up about Africa is not what we are now taught about Africa, right? Okay, so, uh-huh.
So it's thinking about that. It's thinking about like, right, the feminist movement as it's historically existed has not been for everyone. It really hasn't.
No, and I have to say, I wouldn't describe myself as a feminist.
I'm here to convince everyone, but also at the same time, I was having this conversation with a huge group of people, actually. I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago in Zanzibar, so like living my best life in the sun.
Bro, I want to be, can I be cool to this conference? Because I'm dying to go to Zanzibar. Is it amazing?
It was beautiful. And after like London weather, it was just, it was a shock, and it was the best shock to be in just like the heat and on the beach, and it was lovely.
Yeah, stop showing off and get back to the feminism crap.
Oh, my boyfriend hated me for it. I was like, oh, they sent me the name of the resort. Can you Google it for me? He was like,
he's like, no, shut up.
But yes, I was at this conference presenting an article about transformative leadership and feminism. And, you know, it was a conference with African intellectuals. And I was there saying we need to be African feminists, because if we want to create the Africa we want, it genuinely needs to be gender equal, like facts. So I was giving this.
Can I add to that? It should also have people like me, who just because we're not Black doesn't mean we're not African.
Exactly.
And that's actually a very big problem. Not to hijack your conversation. We'll have that another day. But yeah, go for it.
But that's another intersection. Like, we just have all these assumptions and these like flat avatars. And it's like, no, actually, there are like a million avatars, and we need to like find a way to engage with all of them. And someone was like, hey, like feminism, what? You know, some women aren't really feminist. They don't support other women, blah. And I'm like, you know what? My personal definition of feminism is the bell hooks version that says that we're ending female oppression and all other kinds of oppression. Because I, as an intersectional feminist, I'm saying I'm not only advocating for women's rights in general, I'm advocating for the specific like priorities of Black women and Indian women and disabled women and LGBTQ women. And also, as I advocate for those intersections, I'm also being an ally to LGBTQ communities, disabled communities, communities of other marginalized races, and so on.
So you're saying that I can't use the word just as the word feminist, because it isn't niched and specific enough to speak to everyone? Or are you rejecting the definition of feminism as it's been traditionally portrayed?
I reject many definitions. I think, so when I was like a teenager, because of like TV, I was a choice feminist. I was like, women's rights is about having the right to choose what you want to do and choose what you want to do with your body and all of those things. And then I grew up a little bit and I read the books, and it's like, choice feminism isn't very useful, because what many women are struggling with is not just choice. It's access, it's opportunities. So if you want to be a feminist that's actually creating equality, don't just stand about talking about the women who have the privilege to choose, and talk about the women who don't have that privilege and serve the goals that even get them to the point that they can practice this choice feminism.
I tell you something, it's very interesting. I find that the older I get, the more horrified I am by the way we behave as women in the world. Not the way we behave, or the way, I don't want to say the way we are treated, but the space that is given for us within the world and humanity. Because, so I coach women, right? I have a business that has a shedload of women over 40. And I used to think feminism came to me as a fight because I was not white. I was Indian. I was brought up Indian, and I had certain, and then I grew up in Africa. I had certain things I was forced to comply with growing up. And actually what I wanted to do and be was something so different to that. And so that was what I found my voice as a form of my feminism, right? Mm-hmm. And then I thought that's because I was Indian. Then I look around at a bunch of white women, yellow women, pink women, orange women. And I'm like, bro, we're all screwed. Yeah. It's not just about my color and me. It turns out that you can be a white British woman living just up the road. I had this one client who I actually couldn't work with anymore, because her husband, they had two boys and three girls, and her husband sent the two boys to one of the most expensive private schools in the country. And the three girls went to a comprehensive because they were going to get married.
In the UK?
No, babe. Not just in the UK, 5 years ago.
Oh my, so that's a common story, like, because I'm Zambian, and that's something that exists back home, right?
Where it's, you like, see what I'm saying, but it's
the boy will be a breadwinner, we need to get him the best, we want you to go to school, but like,
yeah, you know, have fun, don't waste the money.
And I mean, you also like assume that wouldn't happen in the UK.
It happened, and it happened to her. And she was an upper class, well-educated, white English woman without her own money, because she had stayed home and started to give birth to these five children. She was a phenomenal mother and an amazing woman. But there was a place there where I was like, I don't know how to have this conversation anymore. Because the conversation was, do I encourage you to say this is terrible when you already feel terrible? And you have to take people where they are. But I, you know, things like that, the older I get, the more they horrify me. Because I'm kind of like, it's so built in and endemic in the world that we should be not given a space. Like if you look at like Caroline Criado Perez's book, Invisible Women.
One of my favorite books.
Yeah, I worked with her for a while. And she was like, you know, I'm writing this when the book was coming out. And I was like, I can't read this book. It will upset me so much. I won't sleep for a year. And then eventually, like, I started reading it earlier this year, because it took me like 2.5 years, 3 years to get to reading it. And it traumatizes me. So is it not that we want people like you to go and break all barriers? And when you say intersectional feminist, you bring it down to a place where I have no idea what you're even talking about. Should your message not be easily available? Or should it be what you're doing, like drilling right down?
That's a good point. I think something I've just come to believe is that every individual needs to have their individual definition of whatever their values systems are. So
hang on that for 1 second. We'll be right back. And then I want to know exactly what your values are and how they break down feminism, because I want to see if I can adopt them and say they're mine too, right? Is it a generational thing? So we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So we're back. Okay, tell me.
I identify as feminist, and that is me believing in equality and me also going, hey, I'm not going to call myself a humanist or something general like that, because the historical subjugation of women requires stating the name of the problem, which is, hey, women and girls are pushed behind. But I also believe that inequality and those are the exact same thing. A book I read super recently is The Seven Necessary Sins of Women and Girls by Mona Etalwe, I think. And she's an Egyptian journalist. And she talks about violence and lust and ambition and power and how dangerous those things are when they're in a female avatar, for example. So a powerful man is like great and a powerful woman is like distressing. And I can
vouch for that. let me just put my hand up as a very powerful woman to vouch for how distressing it can be.
It really stresses people out. And those are also things that I like. I am an ambitious person. I am not okay with it. Because like you said earlier, like I was born and raised in Africa. I was born and raised in Zambia. And not to say that I had like super traditional parents, but just like the soup all of us are in is not very nice to ambitious girls. And I spent my entire life being ridiculously terrified of being super ambitious and, you know, being smart and wanting to be known as someone who is ambitious and smart. A funny story, my gosh, I read a lot. I love reading. I now have like a podcast with my friend. And this is a like long, like lifelong love story. And in grade 3, I think, we had like a reading contest. They're like, oh yeah, like, you know how you read at school at that level. I think at that point I must have been, 7 years old, or just like a baby. And I read tons, I read loads of the books in class, and the teacher was like, oh, whoever reads like the most books by the end of the term gets a prize. And I am like a reader, so I'm like racing through this at ease. I'm in,
yeah, you're enjoying it.
My own. And I had a friend who was a guy, and he was also kind of a reader, but like I read more than him, but whatever. And the time comes for like, oh, give me your reading log so I can count and see who won the prize. But I was like, oh my goodness, I can't win this prize because like that would be really icky. Like 7-year-old me was like, oh, this is really icky. So I didn't submit my reading log and I let other people win. And my teacher was like, Lauren, I know you've won this. And I was like, no, Mrs. Chibwana, I don't know where it is. And she's like, okay, I'll count tomorrow, bring it tomorrow. And I was like, no, like
what on earth gave you that idea?
I have no idea what happened to 7-year-old me.
Wow. But like,
that's how quickly they catch you.
Yeah, like from the beginning, bro.
Like right from push. And, you know, now I've defined myself as an ambitious person, and that's like, that's an activity and that's a value and that's something I want to inspire in other people, especially other young Black African women. And that's a personal thing. I've chosen that as like my feminist mandate includes being ambitious because it's important.
So let me ask you a question. Because it's inevitable, I will try to mentor anyone who stands in front of me. Why are you not describing yourself as a powerful woman? Ooh, did you see your eyes just opened up there? For anyone who's just listening, she literally, your eyes just kind of went.
I have a wildly expressive face.
Yeah, no, but I'll tell you, you're not the only person that says that when I ask that question. But why would you not describe yourself as powerful?
It's the layers to it. I think a huge thing is my age. Of kind of the last 6 months, I've had to like confront the fact that I do have valuable experience. Like I wrote a book, and I started writing that book when I was 21, and I didn't write the first chapters with the intention of publishing. I was writing for myself. I was writing because I was personally frustrated, you know, being like a very lonely Black girl studying mathematics and feeling really isolated because of that, and wanting to understand that from like a social perspective and a personal one. And then it turned into a book. And as I was writing the book and telling people about the book, I was so awkward because I was like, you're 21, you're like, you're an idiot, you're a baby. How can you decide to write this book? Even though that book is about social factors, which I did extensive research on. That book includes tons of interviews, and it's grounded in being a young girl and then a university student. And I've been both of those things. And I was so awkward. And
yeah, you might say you were an expert at those things.
You might say I'm an expert at talking about being at like a predominantly white institution and a STEM degree as a Black woman. Like you might, I not even might say, I am actually an expert in that experience. But it was so icky, and it's still kind of icky to speak so authoritarian, speak with authority on that topic. Because Who knows what I've absorbed from the social system around me about young people don't get platforms like this. Young people don't yet have the experience or the perspective to talk about anything, because ageism is a huge problem in the African context. Young women, there's a gendered—
See, I just hear excuses. About it. You were invited to an African conference to come speak as an expert, which you did. You're on this show, and I haven't patronized you yet. In fact, I've challenged you because I treat you as somebody with a brain who is capable of being challenged. So why would you? So it's interesting to me because you've done these, I find this very interesting with women. We do all these amazing things where we're almost pulling the elastic band as far as it can go. And then we kind of stop at where the elastic band is pulled at its fullest, and because we get discomfort there. My suggestion is that you put down that elastic band and get a bigger one and let it stretch even more. And you'll still feel discomfort, but you know, until you can dump the band and think, screw this, I am who I am, you know, get a bigger crucible to fit yourself in, because your crucible is clearly not up to date with who you are.
It's a work in progress. It's
yeah, that's it's why I'm asking.
General thing, and it's a me thing. Like I'm very fortunate to have the money to spend on a lot of therapy to work this, because I was given so much like positive feedback for being humble, right? And now in hindsight, I'm just like, wow, I was trained to not self-promote and not self-advocate.
On every freaking level.
And now I'm in all this therapy. And like the book I'm literally reading right now is Fuck Being Humble. But can I say that?
We F already have. Humble,
By Stephanie Sword Williams, I want to say. And it's a book about self-promotion because she's like, hey, this is idiotic.
She's got to be American.
She's British, actually.
No, I love that. I'm going to have UK her on the show. Platform. What's her name?
Stalk her. She's amazing. I'm pretty sure it's Stephanie Sword Williams. I would just like Google F Being Humble and it'll pop up. Because like I'm very aware that I need to get to the point where I'm like, actually this. Like, actually, I know the stuff and I get to talk about it. Or actually, you do. I don't know the stuff, but I get to ask.
You've got to decide what you're, it's interesting to me. 2.5, 3 years ago, because I speak usually every week. The pandemic changed things. We're back to speaking a lot. And I remember thinking at one stage that I had to cut new clothes for myself. And the thing that I really care about and I love deeply and I know a lot about is being powerful, because I grew up in a very powerful family in a very powerful environment and ended up completely powerless. And so I had to rebuild that sense of power and own it, because it was my sense of power, not my sense of this kind of power that came from anywhere else. And I want to challenge you on this going forward somewhere for when you're comfortable to do it. And I remember saying to myself, I think 2019 at some stage, that I am going to say every time I speak publicly, I'm a very powerful woman. And I enjoy that about myself. And I have literally said it every single time I speak.
I love that.
Every single time. And it is very interesting because it's the women that kind of go, you know, the guys are like, oh, yeah, clearly. I mean, look at you, right? And the women are like, and the women, some women get tingles, some get goosebumps, some are just like, oh my God, what is wrong with you, chick? You know, a little bit. And it's one of those, I think you should always pick a phrase that does really push and scare you and then adopt it and see how it feels when you wear it.
That is, so that story reminds me of, so I'm a big Shonda Rhimes fan.
Me too.
She had that speech where she just told everyone, like, I'm the highest paid person in television or something like that. And I read her book Year of Yes, and I've seen some of her interviews, and she like says a lot about being like an anxious person and incredibly shy and introverted and all of that.
Yes.
And how she had to decide to own, like, hey, I am literally the highest paid like showrunner on TV. Me.
She's phenomenal, because you pick her because you know everything about her is going to be good. Right?
Inventing Anna. Iffy.
You what, sorry?
Inventing Anna.
No, that's true. I didn't like that. But you know, hey, why wouldn't you make something for money? Be my guest. I do things for money. She should do things for money.
She's a very successful woman and an incredible writer. Grey's Anatomy is like 20 seasons strong or something. Like, all hail the Queen Shonda. But what your story about saying, like, I am a powerful woman and I like that about myself is a lot of like what she did. And like, thank you for the homework. Oh gosh, more homework. To like figure out what that is for me. I think I want to move into speaking because I've written this book and I want to talk to young girls and be like, hey, and just like wave and jump up and down and push them and not necessarily push them into STEM, because I'm not like, you know, STEM isn't the only thing. Like, please become politicians and English teachers and musicians. But like, you know, be proactive and be aware and be the person writing that story.
So let me stop you for a sec, because we'll take a break. And when we come back, I want to actually talk about your book and what you want to go forward with from this, right? So that would be, that's going to be a really great way to round up this call.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
The station that makes you feel good.
So thank you, because that's interesting, right? I like that being inspiring is actually very hard. You know, it's a very hard, again, I always think of it as clothing. It's very hard clothing to wear because there's a part of you that you kind of have to look at it and understand it. And then you think, I don't know how to, I mean, I would ring up a friend of mine who's very famous and go, I've got to go do a talk and I've got to be inspiring and I don't know how to do that. What the fuck am I meant to do? And she'd be like, shut up, get up there and tell them who you are. That's inspiring. I was like, oh, so I don't have to do anything but be me. And they're like, yeah, I'm like, oh, I can do that. Then whether you're inspired or not is your business. All I can do is be me because that's my business.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you should totally do that. I love the idea of you going out and inspiring young women of all colors, actually.
Yeah.
Tell me this book. Why did you write this book? What is the name of the book? It's called The Shuri Effect.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the whole title, Bridging the Gap for Young Black Women in STEM?
Yes.
Okay, so why did you write this?
I think I mentioned this vaguely earlier. This was a COVID project. So like COVID hits and like I'm locked in my flat, which was fine because I wanted to be responsible. And I'm someone who's always loved reading. And because I loved reading, I thought I'd be an author. And then I always like would write little short stories. So in processing, you know, the trauma of COVID and being a student working online during that time, what happened was my journal entries just got really long. So what before was like you know, half a page because like half a page once every other week because I'm busy, became me sitting down at my laptop and really just processing uncomfortable things that were happening to me mm-hmm. as part of my like degree and my academic experience, which I understood to be like misogynoir. So like because I'm Black and because I'm female, dodgy stuff was just like happening. And I'd tell my boyfriend like, oh my goodness, this girl like ignored me today, even though I like said the correct thing in the tutorial. And he'd be like, oh, you're just being dramatic. Maybe she didn't hear you. But then I tell my friends who are Black women and they'd be like, fuck her. Like, no, because they felt it too. Yeah. Even if they weren't like in my maths tutorials, for example. And I just wrote those blog style things for myself. And then I joined a writing community because I've always written, but I've never had scaffolding. I've never had structure. I've never had a support system. So I joined a writing community just because I wanted someone to be like, hey, what have you written recently? And I could just like keep up the habit after, you know, what was meant to be a short lockdown turned into like 2 years of being sad.
You know, our entire lives. Mm.
Essentially, we're still here. Yep. And in that community, I built up 20,000 words. And once I kind of got around that number, someone in the community was like, you know, there's this thing called the Creator Institute. There's this thing called New Degree Press. And they work with, they're like an indie publisher in Washington, D.C., and like they're looking for authors all the time, connect with them. And I had my 20,000 words and I connected with them and they were like, there's something here.
Amazing. Sorry, what are they called?
New Degree Press.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. I'm just gonna get more people to put on my show.
Uh-huh. And yeah, like the 20,000 words became significantly more words. And then we did some editing and some chopping. And then I took a break because breaks are important. I was
very
a student with a part-time job and attempting to be healthy and, you know, hang out with my friends and all the things that humaning requires, like being a person, and at the same time writing a book. And that got very crazy. So there was just like a gap where I contacted New Degree and I said, I'm so sorry to break my contract. And I had to pay a fee. And I was fine with that investment, which is how I'm framing it, which is how I have to frame it in my head. Because I needed the break. And I was like, I need this space and time. And I took some space and time. And the chapters I wrote during that extension period are my favorite chapters. Good. That's when I got really into, hey, look at the ridiculous gaps that exist when you only let white men do stuff. Like, look at like the truly insane.
Like the invasion of Ukraine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. that is what happened when you, ugh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Goodness, the situation with him was an absolute tragedy. But yeah, this book wasn't, it was always in the bucket list. I didn't think I'd do it in 2022.
So what did you...
Organically, we got there.
What was the craziest thing that you came across in your research?
A stat super early in the book, I think, is something like young girls, and this is, I think the stat is like definitely girls below the age of 18, potentially girls like around the age of 14, do like 160 million more hours of housework than boys. It's like gobsmacking, but also makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And that is one of my favorite stats. And a stat that I came across actually at the beginning of my time at university. And I told this story at some point in the book, but I attended my first uni event and I was talking to people because I'm quite chatty. And I was like, oh, these are my people now. And I saw a girl across the room and she was beautiful and she had these like purple clips in her hair. And I realized in that moment that she was the only other Black person I had seen that day. And I went home and I asked Google, and Google said about 2.9% of STEM degrees are given to Black women. And of course, like as someone who, you know, likes numbers, statistics are interesting, malleable things.
Yeah.
So we should always be careful with how we talk about them. But that number hit me.
Yeah.
In what year was that? 2017. And I thought about it throughout the rest of my time at university, just like, yes, the number is that is the number, because I'm in a lot of these classes by myself.
But there's something there. What I like about you and what I like about what you've done is that there is something about being 100% present in watching yourself make history. You know, and that's something that takes a lot of courage. And it takes a lot of self-awareness and strength to do. And that's kind of what it seems to me you've done. You watched yourself create history, and then you wrote about yourself creating history, and now you're talking about yourself creating history. And doesn't that strike you as the definition of someone who's really powerful?
Full circle moment. First of all, thank you for saying that. I think, gosh, everyone loves some affirmation. And we're growing. I will need to like send you an email when I finally like put on this item of clothing to like be like, oh no, I am a powerful person. I will definitely let you know.
I'll enjoy it.
it has been wonderful. And as much as this book is like has lots of interludes and excerpts about me and like, you know, from my point of view of like, look what happened. I interviewed so many generous Black women who told me their stories and who I threw into the book to, you know,
speak. Are there many of them?
I'm pretty sure I spoke to like 35 people. And the way the book is like done up is that they're like, you know, chapters where stuff is happening. And chapters often start with like stories from my experience that like relate to the chapter, but then there are interludes everywhere. And all those interludes are filled with quotes from the women I interviewed. Kind of centered around themes, and they like interviewing them was so much fun because I love talking to people, and this was during COVID, so I was like, you know, my social circle shrunk significantly.
Yeah.
And it's, gosh, they were so inspiring and so interesting and so generous and so funny, and their stories did so much to bolster my own, you know, morale.
Who was the most inspiring?
I can't pick a favorite. I really can't pick a favorite. Let's see. This is not to say that this is a favorite one, but like something I remember, I interviewed a teacher, actually. I mean, she was a lawyer, then she became a teacher because she's like, children need better teachers. And she, it's like a really long excerpt, but I was like, I need to keep this in its entirety. And she was just talking about how like she, is working with children and encouraging them to like think about careers and da 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 da. And the kids would come to her and be like, I spoke to the careers counselor. She thinks my musical talent like could take me somewhere, which is fine. But like she spoke to this, you know, the stereotype threat of the careers counselor being like, you should be a rapper, and not being like, you could be anything.
Oh my God.
Right.
Did you see the thing from last night, which, well, to now time when we're recording this, but with John Baptiste, when he won the 5 Grammys, and he's creating an event with the New York Philharmonic. And I was listening to him today and it struck me completely, because he's a Black man that won all these incredible awards with New Orleans kind of music, which no one expects. He then said that, what would you do if you reimagined an orchestra today? Who would be the musicians? What kind of music would they play? What would the orchestra look like? How would the orchestra behave? And I'm just like, my brain kind of blew up because I look at orchestras. I did not grow up with Western music. So I look at Western music and I want to shoot myself in the head on a regular, oh, because it hurts my ears. I can't quite cope with the sound. No, absolutely. I had a very, very, very famous Chinese chef who was a friend of mine who's now passed. And I remember somebody saying to him, do you like classical music? And he said, do you mean Western classical? Because of course, Chinese classical and Indian classical is an old, old, old tradition, right?
Yeah.
So you kind of have to reimagine all of this stuff with a different slant for it to then be something that we're comfortable and know about and are used to.
I mean, rebuilding the world is quite the project. And I'm going to check that out. I was really happy that he won the Grammys that he won. Because I see he won, like, I think he's on Stephen Colbert. I think him and his band are on that show. And I love that show.
Me too, exactly.
But yeah, like what, it's going to require so much creativity and a lot of courage, but like, what would the world look like if everyone was in the room where it happens? If with regards to architecture and politics and education and healthcare, where would we even be if the set of people who made the big choices was representative? And that's a huge question in the book, like, hey, this is specifically centered around Black women's experiences because I'm a Black woman and I can speak really honestly to that. But like, also, what if everyone was just there and discussing things and contributing things? Like, can you even imagine what we'd have now?
Yeah, because I'd like that. So I can totally imagine it. But thank you. I really loved having you on, Lauren. That was just fantastic. Tell me how people can find you.
Gosh, I will give you all the information, but check out my website, thesherieffect.com, and you can get, you know.
How do you spell that? Thesherieffect.com. Would you spell
it? thesherieffect.com. And there you'll like find information about the book, and there's like a free bonus chapter you can check out as well. On Twitter, I am at Lauren the Writer, but I'm like the least active Twitter user ever. But like sometimes I pop up with just like, these are my hot takes. And you can follow me on LinkedIn under Lauren Mwale. And yeah, you can email me at thesherieffectbook@gmail.com. And I'd love to have conversations with whoever's interested. But I will do all the information to just pop somewhere because that's so much easier.
We can do that as well. But it's always good to have it spelt out right. Thank you very much, Lauren. It was such a pleasure having you on. I really appreciate your time.
It was so much fun talking to you.
Yeah. Never goes quite the way you think it's going to go, though. But that's the joy of this. So welcome, everybody, to the. I hope you had a good time on our conversation today with Lauren and I. And I look forward to having you back on the next episode. I obviously cannot speak the next episode. And this is Activate Yourself. And my name is Geeta Sidhuwal. And thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Geeta Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.